Hadi bakalım.
Why won't you die?
Beneath this mask, there is more than flesh. Beneath this mask, there is an idea, Mr. Creedy. And ideas are bulletproof.
The shooting of Charlie Kirk. It's one of those moments that you can just feel our culture on this knife's edge. I played that video at the very beginning because I like to think that that's the real lesson here a little bit, is that, man, I don't think this ends anything. In fact, I think it just changes. It's like a law of preservation there. It's Charlie Kirk is gone, but the ideas, they're bulletproof. The ideas can't die with a bullet as long as the rest of us continue on with the courage that he so demonstrated. It's a crazy moment. You know, you can't, there's so much to contend with and so much to deal personally for everybody. Everyone has to look inside a little bit. If you're online and you've been experiencing this week with me, I have a couple symptoms. Had a hard time sleeping two nights in a row there. Had a hard time being productive, hard time kind of getting my act together. And if you're that way too, it sounds a little cliche. But if you're kind of having this feeling of the post-adrenaline dump and adrenaline dump and all that kind of stuff that I think I am, that's because we just watched somebody that, you know, we knew. Maybe you didn't know him. I mean, I didn't know him. I've met him a couple times, shook his hand, things like that, watched him speak, consumed some of his content, things like that. But I didn't know him. He's not like a friend of mine or anything like that. But you kind of, when even as a small-time podcaster, I sometimes get, you know, folks kind of pick up a conversation with me midstream, like from a podcast, you know, and I'm like kind of trying to tag, like, did we talk about this? I didn't talk to you about it, but I had been talking to them, you know, like they get to experience me and I don't get to experience them on a more regular basis. It's a strange thing, especially for people that are close to or you don't see as much anymore, but you know, it's a crazy thing. And so I think with Kirk, and it's hard to watch what happen. So, I think our bodies are a little bit in a state of like we're under attack. You know, that poor Ukrainian girl, watching that was rough, man. That's enough to make a week not great. But then right afterwards to have somebody that you feel kind of close to, even as you're a long ways away, die like that right in front of you can give you your subconscious a sense that you're under threat, or in a battle. The neighboring tribe has finally crossed the Rubicon and is now amongst you, stabbing young women and killing young men. I'm not saying that as like an analogy to the left or the homelessness problem or anything like that, just that that's the experience. And then on top of that, you have that subconscious, and then you have your conscious mind, what your conscious mind is thinking. And I am just worried for our country. Really worried about the country my children are going to grow up in. When you're a young guy and you can really afford to be risk tolerant, you can afford to see things in terms of revenge a lot easier than when you're a little older, when you got a lot of, you've built some assets and you had the most precious assets in your life crawling into your lap, and it's hard to hard to really connect with them because you are so numbed by what you've seen and fearful for the violence in our world, in our country. That's a lot to contend with. So I hope that this message finds you taking a step back to try to deal with that in the best ways that you know how. I'm not dealing with it well. I could do better. That's for sure. The issues of our society is what I wanted to talk about mostly. I don't want to talk about the shooter. I think that we don't know enough yet. I mean, on the Discord, we've been chatting all that kind of stuff. And I think there's something cathartic about like just turning on the logic side of your brain and trying to assess these things, especially because apparently we're all becoming experts on assassinations and with rifles from rooftops, strangely. A lot of that going around. You know, I don't condemn anyone who does that. I think I'm doing it, but I don't think that's worth it for the podcast. I want to step back a bit about what this means, just on the facts that we know, which is that Charlie Kirk has went to an event in Utah to speak to college students, like he's done dozens, hundreds of times, maybe, and was shot for what he represented for his point of view, for his religious beliefs, for his political beliefs. But I think it's as much of anything, it's the symbol of who he was. A guy who made young and conservative cool on college campuses, which is really a feat. If you're a millennial, it's hard to imagine just how uncool it was to be Republican circa 2000. 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I mean, it was a tough time to have any kind of R affinity or any kind of right-wing beliefs. And it's still a tough time. I speak to, you know, Zoomers. I speak to the Zoomers, and I know some and who are in college, and they're contending with their own challenges. They're different challenges now, but they're still very real. But they're cooler now, in part because of Charlie Kirk. And I think that kind of demonstrates just how dangerous he was. May we all be as dangerous to any force that is so evil that they would shoot a man in America for speaking his mind. So I think this will make America more right wing. It'll have exactly the opposite effect as long as we don't allow it to cow us. And I don't see that. I don't see people hesitating to continue to be advocates for limited government and a constitutional government. The right is unbowed by this, and I hope they will. At least the appearance of that is substantial and real. But really what it does is the reason why it will make, I think, the right wing more right wing and is that it violates a core moral intuition, right? I mean, like the right wing is really the institution, the part of the mind and the spirit, the soul that says that there are threats out there, there are barbarians at the gate, and we have a unique, precious thing that we have to preserve. And that precious thing isn't exchangeable for just other things, right? And it naturally is risk averse, and there are problems with that. Absolutely. There's blind sides to everything and trade-offs. But that part of us that says like there's something really unique and special and important here, this violates that in such a grotesque way that if you at all have spent time in the ideas that just, it's so disgusting that I fail to see how it can't make us more right wing. It violates a sense of the sacred, you know, like this wasn't a guy that was, morally vague. This is a guy who was devout, kind, devoted, and I think anyone who knew anything about him could see that. And even in the brief times that I met him, was a very nice guy. And you, it came through his media life as well. Like he didn't put on a character. From every testimony of everyone who's talked about it to the experiences of people on this podcast. And lastly, I think it brings the threat detection up. That subconscious feeling of watching that is a driver for an inclination to say, wait a minute, what I thought was real is not real. Right. And of course, like it's understandable because people like you have these moments, these shock moments, like when Trump was almost assassinated, and you have these moments where people, it feels like everything is changing. Everything is getting more dangerous. And we were really close to with that last year. But then it didn't. Trump wasn't killed. He went on to win the election, and there's still kind of a lingering threat there, but it seems like it had passed. And with the excitement of the election, with the excitement of the first 100 days and the executive orders and, you know, things like that, it's easy to forget. But some people didn't forget. A set of ideas did not forget. And the people who are possessed by those ideas didn't forget. In fact, they feel even more under threat and even more radical because of it. And that's another reason why we can't allow the ideas to die, is because we're fighting a spiritual battle, an intellectual battle, every level of analysis battle, physical battle, against forces that want you to be quiet. And I think it will make more people who are not right wing. Otherwise, you are on the side of the murderers who stand on the corpses of fathers to make a point about gun control. And that threat detection thing, that deep, you know, hindbrain part of you sees a man get shot for his ideas, and that will hopefully, I want to believe, will wake some people up. And what will this mean? This will mean, ultimately, if you're a leftist and you're kind of wavering on this, I don't imagine that's much of my audience, but if I may appeal briefly to it, this will decrease tolerance if you're worried about intolerance. This will mean more religion, more tribalism. And I think this is really important with this, is like when you think about that graph, that famous graph that's like conservatives really care about the people close in their lives and they don't care about people far from their lives, and you know, liberals are the opposite. This like progressive detachment from the things closest to you, it has its place, right? But it has to be balanced so that you can learn and see threat detection. And a lot of people are going to be pulled out of that place when they see this threat of a civil society under degrading into civil strife. I don't think that there's an easy way out that's implementable from the right or from the left to change that trajectory. I mean, that's just baked in the cake now. And with that, you know, all of the things that come with more tribalism, more religion, less tolerance. And I'm not saying that as right wingers. I'm not saying that as a bad thing. I'm only saying that is just how it works. There's these moral intuitions that we have that express themselves in politics. And these moral intuitions in this case is the moral intuition of order and the sacredness of peace and dialogue. That is embedded in our culture and our values and ties in to parts of our brain that are highly connected with religiosity and lower tolerance for diversions from norms. Some of that's always needed in society. I'm not at all saying that that's a bad thing. Tribalism is a human constant that is everywhere. Of course, what makes the West unique is the degree to which we put checks on those and we create bounds around them. So when Rand Paul's talking about To Kill a Mockingbird, what he's relying on is the moral intuition on the other side of that that says, yes, we have tribes. Yes, we need to protect ourselves. But there are also due process is a thing that has evolved out of English common law and our ancestors to guide the tribal instinct into the most productive use for it. To seek justice, not revenge, to know that we're punishing the guilty because punishing the guilty is what makes us who we are. Of not just punishing someone because they have the wrong ideas, belong to the wrong tribe. That's what this demon did to Charlie Kirk. That's their error. We can't make the same one. Our pushback on this has to be in line with, in congruence with, compatible with what we want to see in the world. If we become the monster we're trying to slay, then we're just a monster. And don't get me wrong, I desire the same sense of anger and disgust. Disgust is another, you know, sign of right-wingism. More disgust tolerance or less disgust tolerance and, you know, basically being disgusted more easily by things. This is worth getting into. So I'm going to change my plan a little bit here on the fly because I think it's worth it. The dialogue to me seems to be breaking down in a couple ways. At least one of it is, does the right wing have a partner for peace? If the right wing says, hey, look, there's no place for political violence, we're not going to do that, will the left wing reciprocate? And I understand why people would be skeptical of that after, you know, the blase way that people took the killing of the Ukrainian girl with the seemingly, you know, not caring about someone trying to assassinate a major party's political candidate from so many people on the left last year. To what happened with COVID, I understand that that's how it is. And you know, I think that the article saying that the left wing has an assassination culture, I mean, there's a problem there. You know, I want to steel man this side. Is there a justification? This is a poll from Rutgers on, is there a justification for murder of Elon Musk and Donald Trump? And this was done a little while ago, back when Elon was in the news more and doing his Doge thing. And basically, you know, if you look at the left, 50% of people on the left says, yeah, Musk, you just kill him because he's trying to cut spending. To cut spending for bloated, massive bureaucracies that are bankrupting us. I just don't know how you can contend with the world that way. Justification for murdering Donald Trump was at 56%, a majority, almost 60%. That there's any justification for that is crazy. I assume that's born out of a sense of helplessness, a sense that there's nothing I can do. The only thing that's left is this. And I'm sure most of the responders to this, it's all talk. I've been in politics for a long time, and there's always those people that, you know, they're LARPing with revolution. But even this much talk is really, understandably, the right wing is understandably contending it with it. Like, well, man, it feels like this is the escalatory spirals on its way up, and we're not going to be caught at the end of the spiral. That is, of course, in an escalatory spiral, what you would think. That's the only rationale. To go with, like, either that or you're just a victim. I understand that. And then you look at the way that the left's contending with this in the corporate press And I'm sure you've seen this, but it just bears worth just reminding you so that we can all get on the same emotional page with it as we go, so that we can know. Because I'm going to come back around on this a little bit to talk about it, because I want to connect to the first thing I said. So here's MSNBC.
But following up with what was just said, he's been one of the most divisive, especially divisive younger figures in this, who is constantly sort of pushing this sort of hate speech or sort of aimed at certain groups. And I always go back to hateful thoughts lead to hateful words, which then lead to hateful actions.
Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot of hate going around. But I don't think that there are people that you might criticize, and just criticizing a group that you don't think should be criticized warrants death. I don't think that. And I think this attitude of like, I can explain it. Cause like, this is the chickens coming home to roost, argument is wrong. I think it's not only wrong on its merits, but there's this inclination for the left to spend their time telling us how if we just listened to them, this never would have happened. If we'd just been not talked about these groups, it wouldn't have happened. But that's not what America is. America, you can say, in America, you can say what you think is true, even if it's mean, and you shouldn't be shot for it. It should really be that simple. AOC also jumping in with her thoughts.
People can finger point all they want. Look at the record. Look at the actions of what we are doing. I don't think a single person who has dedicated their entire career to preventing gun safety legislation from getting passed in this House has any right to blame anybody else but themselves for what is happening.
Now, I don't think she's talking about Charlie Kirk here in the context. She's talking about Republicans saying that Democrats are rhetoric of calling everyone a Nazi and saying how you should punch Nazis and calling everyone the worst words possible, fascists and everything, is a contributor to this. And you know, look, I mean, you can criticize Republicans for maybe going too far with that point. I wouldn't. I think there's something there because none of these people are Nazis. These are just ad hominems, and telling people in these communities that they are under threat, that they are facing a genocide if Kamala Harris doesn't win the election, might go a little too far. Might be when you're now talking about turning down the temperature, that might be the vector of the temperature that you might turn down. But let me be clear. This has nothing to do with gun control. Grifters. I mean, it's making this into some corporate talking point about how if everyone just agreed with you, this wouldn't have happened is really a disgusting way to treat people. It's a real shame. You know, I was watching a clip of Donald Trump when he heard that Supreme Court justice had died in his first RGB had died in his first term. And he says, "Oh, wow, I just heard about that. I didn't know." Well, she led a very, very interesting life. You know, I struggle to understand how someone could go to that place. And the rage bait is everywhere. You got all these people on TikTok celebrating his death. You got AOC saying, well, you kind of deserve to be shot if you support the Second Amendment. It is such bad faith argument. It is such profoundly, you're not hearing anything we're saying. And if you can't hear anything we're saying, and you're going to say we deserve to be shot for what we're saying, there's no coming back from that place. the left has to contend with this. And I get why it's hard for them. The left has no sense of the sacred. I think this is a really interesting poll here. And this really gets to the heart, I think, of how this is playing out. Political polls from polling numbers. And I don't know the methodology here. This could be a bad methodology. I didn't get a chance to look into it. But it says 77% of Republicans believe it is always unacceptable to feel joy at the death of someone they oppose, while 38% of Democrats share this view. Always unacceptable to feel joy at the death of someone they oppose. That explains TikTok right now and how Republicans are taking it. You just can't believe that. I mean, and this has been said, and I'm going to repeat it because it's true for me. After 9/11, I spent a decade as deeply in the web of this narrative that they attacked us because, and it's particularly relevant because there's 9/11 today. I spent that time in the web of this narrative that they hate us for our freedom. And I just wanted to understand why that. And it took me a long time to figure out that was rhetoric and propaganda, to my great shame. But in that time, I read the Quran. I read Milestones from the Muslim Brotherhood. I read all this stuff, consumed all this stuff. And I was just coming out of that way of thinking that bought into the propaganda when they shot Osama bin Laden. And me at that time, even then, as right-wing as I am, as communitarian, as, in all the ways that I am, and I'm not less than other people for sure, but I do have my impulses there. And my sense of being an American who was under threat during 9/11 and changed a lot of my life based upon that threat, I still felt disgust when I saw the videos of people celebrating after killing Osama bin Laden. And if there was somebody that I would have an excuse to celebrate the death of, that would have been that guy, right? I mean, the people who died in that circumstance were far from me, sure. Yes, I mean, I'm way out where I live, and that was New York, but those are my fellow Americans, right? And this happened when I was in high school, and it was a formative moment for me. And him as the bad guy, as the lingering threat on the horizon to, end civilization was very real for me at this time. And even then I felt disgust that we should treat this differently than that. That we can't treat it, human life of any kind, even the worst kind, with that kind of cavalier celebration like that. It just triggers something in us. And left wing, if you don't want to go down this escalatory spiral road, you got to learn how to understand that and get some fucking manners. Because that's low class at minimum. People aren't just the symbols that they look like. And maybe this is a thing that you get when you work in politics longer. I've been in it for a minute now, and I've known people I deeply disagree with, and I've got to know them as people, and I realized, oh, they're not just their ideas, they're people too. And if we treat people as they're just their ideas, if they're just their speech, then this is we're not countrymen then. And if you're in the same country, but you're not countrymen, that's a recipe for the worst sort of outcomes. That's Spain in the 1930s. That's a bloody, terrible situation where a lot of people die that did not have to if you just put down your pride and didn't see things in such absolute terms and saw the humanity in the other person and try to persuade them like Charlie was trying to. Another thing I think... let me circle back on that, actually. These things that the left is doing now cannot bait us into responding like them. We have to respond like us, based upon our principles and our values. What drives us towards civilization, towards the institutions that evolved, that made us unique. What drives us that direction? That is our guidepost as conservatives. That doesn't mean passivity. That doesn't mean do nothing. That doesn't mean sit back and call for nonviolence. That's the bare minimum. It should be condemned. His life and his accomplishments should be celebrated. Yes, absolutely. These actions from the left should be condemned. I'm condemning them now. But this impulse to go to the darkest place, we have to get real justice, not just mere vengeance. That's the only way that the ideas are bulletproof. That's the only way that what Charlie Kirk represented, at least to me, I think, can persist, that doesn't die with him. Please meditate on that. And also that there are partners for peace on the left that are encouraging. Glenn Greenwald, for example, did a very great segment on this. I saw some other ones, TikTokers and live streamers, and I saw some terrible ones, but, you know, like Dean Withers and others that, you know, it's hard for me to tell. I don't consume their content enough. Glenn, I do quite a bit, so I could tell that, where he's doing business and where he's being human, and felt very real. That he's deeply worried about this part of his tribe that owns him and doesn't own him at times. And, you know, he kind of stands on his own in many ways. I get that. But also, you know, that the justice is found in the individual, not the group. That's something that we believe and we need to remember. It's not, I mean, in a sense, it's the left has problems. Yes, I'm not denying that need to be tackled culturally and critiqued and pushed against. But ultimately, the only people who can really fix that are the other people on the left. We can push from the outside, and we should. We need to persuade the middle that the left cannot be trusted with this as long as they're going to remain violent in this way. These segments, these kinds of people. And should we get, you know, harsher penalties for repeat offenders? I'm open to that. Okay, fine. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about it as a society. Let's get into the weeds. When it comes to the Ukrainian woman, I can't pronounce her name or can remember right now, but that stuff should be debated and then legislative action should be taken. The Trump administration needs to find this guy who shot Charlie, and they need to do something. They need to get justice. Justice is not going out and just shooting random leftists or harming them. And we got to contend with the rage bait by obviously condemning it and moving on. I'm probably lacking in other things. I'm open to other things we can do. But geez, guys, we got to be really careful in this moment, because this is, you look at the history of how civil societies collapse and crumble into violence. These are the kind of things that can do that. And maybe I'm too close to it because, you know, I shook the guy's hand and looked him in the eye a few times. But and then I'm watching what is being said. And it's not being said by, you know, it's been said by some pretty influential people on the right. We need to know what time it is. I agree. But we need to contend with these things, with the just civil authority, so that we can maintain moral authority in this. If we lose our moral authority, we'll have nothing for the middle. And there were all the actions at. And that is not a call for passivity. One other thing I think is important is our lens and justification here for what we're thinking of. So the core problem is that we're, you know, having to contend with this moment of the internet and seeing this thing and how it affects us. And then we turn on that part of our brain that's like, okay, what happened and how I'm going to internet sleuth this thing. And it's telling how we are working on the symbolism of the moment more so than on what we actually know. And that's another way in which we are seeing people as the symbols of their ideas, not them as humans, not as countrymen. And we're kind of turning off our reason and we're feeling our way through this. And that's understandable. But let me demonstrate that a little bit, and maybe that will kind of make it clear. We don't really know anything yet. We have a lot of, there's a lot of theory, and I'm totally open to dubious speculation. We do that all the time on the podcast, and we try to make clear when we're doing that, so we're not trying to say what we know. I'm not leading anyone astray, but, you know, like, the way that people are reacting is all within a frame to drive it towards some policy issue that they're most interested in. And this is not the time for that, right? Just like the left with the gun control thing, and I'm going to circle on that, but on every other issue too, right? I know Israel's really important. You know, I know that this is a major issue, but don't make Charlie Kirk's death about that until we know more, right? So like, for people who are very skeptical of Israel, this is obviously a Mossad operation, and that is not, or he kind of deserved it because he was a tool of the Zionist regime, or like, all of that stuff is not doing the thing. It's not doing the right thing right now. It's not the right call. For supporters, he was the biggest champion of Israel, and it's really sad he's gone. And that's, you're now the Israeli skeptics look bad. You know, I think it looks really bad, guys. God, I gotta bring this up because this is probably one of the clearest examples of it. This guy, if it turns out, obviously due to speculation, if it turns out that the Muslim Brotherhood was behind the assassination of our friend Charlie, the U.S. must declare war on Turkey and Qatar. No excuses, no delays. What? Where is that coming? Is it just because he criticized the Muslim Brotherhood or Muslims at one point? That's what the clip is about? Really? What are we doing here? And it goes to other places too. I mean, Ukraine supporters, they're like celebrating because he was not on their side about that issue. For pro-choice people, he was a misogynist, so he deserved it. There's like, you know, you get these clips of these college students who don't know anything about him other than that. We're like, man, yeah. Gun control people, obviously, like AOC here. And you got to come to him. If he just listened and it was just a liberal on guns, it wouldn't happen. Never mind the fact that it was a 30-06, a hunting rifle. So is really AOC? Are you going to take our hunting rifles? Is that what your policy is? I mean, you're not even contending with anything that's happening. You're just going to your talking points that got sent to you in a memo. Don't just block and bridge to Second Amendment. I mean, come on. It's a man's life, a husband, a father, a dude just trying to do what he thinks is right, a countryman, someone you supposed to supposedly share a country with. The left can't keep this up. They can't keep saying, if you disagree with me on gun control, you can't complain about being murdered. Come on. Grow up. This is a person. And the other ones. He said bad things about this group. He didn't deserve to die for that. It was speech. You're supposed to be an American. Come on. So I get it. But it seems like to me the antidote to that is to anchor into the humanity of both us and the very people that are enemies in this, who are driving us towards this escalatory spiral. And that's that hard commandment to love your enemies. Doesn't mean we do nothing. Doesn't mean we don't condemn it. I'm trying to model what I'm trying to say as I say it to the best of my ability on my small platform. There's something here to contend with 100%, but we have to contend with it, with us, with what makes us unique. This nihilism, this like death cult worship thing that treats the death of a person, with such cavalier disregard, that can only be defeated by life affirming, qualities, life affirming actions. So when you're considering what you're going to do to respond to this, to activate, to be an activist for your ideas, ask yourself, does this create more of a death cult or not? So rightfully, I understand the calls for people that, you know, political violence is never the solution, but also that people are becoming violent and aren't listening to that. So I want to just leave it with this point of asking, what do we think Charlie Kirk would say at this point in his most noble statement on the issue?
And I'm sorry.
I don't think I told you. My name's Mercury.
Nice to meet you.
Why are you here?
Okay, I've been asked that question a lot. First of all, that question should not even have to be asked, but when people stop talking, really bad stuff starts. When marriages stop talking, divorce happens. When civilization stops talking, civil war ensues. When you stop having a human connection with someone you disagree with, it becomes a lot easier to want to commit violence against that group. What we as a culture have to get back to is being able to have a reasonable disagreement where violence is not an option.
We need to connect as people, and treat the people who are treating this death cavalierly with the shame they deserve. But also, we got to remember that the people on the opposite side are people, and justice comes from the individual, and it can only be done against individuals. Otherwise, it's something else. So thanks for watching. I hope our country can heal. I hope we can do better than this, because this is a dangerous place. And I hope you're praying for it. I'm hoping that we are collectively working towards that and not going the other way. So, peace.